Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Alrighty, the Survivor Specialists, John and McKenna, are back. This time we are joined with the one and only Tegwith. You definitely know her from TikTok, Instagram, all those things. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat about the episode, but also just like chat about, you know, Survivor in general. I don't know. I literally have a Survivor on in the background right now. So you have my cats to enjoy while we're chatting about Survivor. Can never get enough.
Love that. So this podcast is probably more niche than a lot of others because we deep dive into the history of Survivor. So let's get a little bit on your history with Survivor and how you came about the fandom and became like one of the best Survivor TikTokers out there.
Made me blush. It actually is so funny because I first heard about Survivor. My parents did not watch it. I was not allowed to watch TV growing up, like, you know, and that means I love it now. And my high school science teacher was obsessed with Survivor, and he would always give us extra credit if we could like pick a winner pick, and we would always like randomly, we'd get a sheet of paper and we would like randomly choose somebody. And we all thought it was the funniest, silliest thing. How, I can't believe that show's still on, blah, 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 blah. Fast forward to when I met my current partner, Ryan, who we've been together for about 7 years. He is the biggest Survivor super fan that I know. I'm just slightly louder than him. and he was like, I can't do anything on Wednesdays. And I was like, why does he have this standing thing on Wednesdays? And it was because he was watching Survivor. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And then he showed me Survivor China. And literally 20 minutes in, I'm hooked. Like, truly, I watched all of the seasons within, you know, like less than a year. And that was back in 2018. I watched David versus Goliath live. And then, you know, the rest is history. And I just, it's the best show, the best thing, the best group of people. It's just amazing.
100%. And I mean, you also got to meet the one and only Jeff Probst. So
that was crazy. Yeah, that was truly amazing. And like, I can't even believe, you know, what this crazy kind of fandom has brought me. And I just love it so much. And yeah, that was like a top 10 moment of my life. Like, truly, yeah. That's crazy.
100% I would agree. All righty. So let's get into this episode of 48 and the season in general. We've given our thoughts, but we're two episodes in. How are you feeling about this cast, this season, and all that's involved?
I really, really love it. And I think it means, I think it shows how much I love the cast because like I'm devastated. I've been devastated both times by the person who goes home because I really think that they could have in a different world, like brought a lot to the table in their own different ways. And I think that that just means that it's a good cast because I'm just like sad. Vote one, vote two. And I also just think that this episode in particular, I really, really enjoyed because so much went on. I loved like the exposition in the beginning. Like I just truly love getting to know these people. That's the part of Survivor. I love all parts, but the part of Survivor I really love is just like watching humans be humans together for the first, like they've never met each other before and they have to like, you know, get to know each other and they're getting to know each other on national TV. And I loved that like exposition in the very beginning of the episode because it just like, you know, that's camp life, you know? And I just thought it was a great episode. And I think, you know, things are stacking up to be a good season, but you know, I always have high hopes. So
now John brought it up last week, but he was saying it feels very old school. Like this cast feels a little bit more old school rather than new school. Do you feel like, or rather than new era, I guess, but like I have definitely seen like very old school vibes with some of these people.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I mean, I think I heard a couple people like even compare people to like, I heard somebody compare them to Boston Rob and to like some other iconic players. And I just think that there is, you know, Survivor is going in cycles. And I think, you know, in new era, it's new era so much that people are like, wow, well, that kind of what is expected and we can't do that anymore. So, you know, now we are getting people to go back and revert and that's just the interesting, like, kind of evolution of the game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally see that. I totally see some of these, like, big characters. You know, Say is playing such an interesting game where I thought at the beginning it was way too hard. And yet I think it's working. I don't know. It's crazy. But yeah, I totally see that. I totally agree with you, John.
Yeah. I think it's really going to depend, especially with Say, how Vula moves here, because it feels like we're watching Vula just become another disaster tribe that we've had a couple seasons off since we had Yanu in 46 be that last disaster tribe. So I think 47 gave us a reprieve and we kind of forgot that this has been something that we've seen a lot in the new era. And I think that's adding to the intrigue of it because it doesn't feel like we're bogged down with the idea of a disaster tribe this time. Mm-hmm. Instead, it feels like this disaster tribe is giving us so much because the editing in this season has been so fantastic. We know the other two tribes almost as well as we know the tribe that's gone to tribal council twice already.
Yeah.
I think that is a very good point. You know, the editing is very one of the reasons why I think Survivor is so good, because I think it's got some of the best editing in just reality television. And I do think that you're right. I feel like in a lot of other seasons, I'm just like, who are these other people? Like specifically, I go back to season 41, where I truly was like, who? I don't remember what the blue tribe was called, but I was like, I don't know who's on the blue tribe. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup because we just didn't know who they were. I mean, they won every single time. So, you know, that's not great.
And it's crazy because Erica came from the blue tribe and won the season. And we're like, we didn't know her until the merge.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, who is that? What's her name? I'm sorry. And so I think that, you know, it's like the 90 minutes helps quite a bit. But I think it also just maybe they're listening to us. Maybe they're like, hey, man, I guess we're hearing that you guys like the cast. So maybe we'll give it to you more.
Yeah, or like you like watching a social game play out. I don't know.
I know.
So we will get into our outwit moments of the episode, and we're going to talk about telling people to play their idol. We see that happen with Say here, that she has to play her idol because Kevin is going to come for you. I might still vote for you. So like, I don't know, with Cedric. So should Cedric have stayed like boy strong? Should he have told Say to play her idol? Because now she played it without getting the majority of the votes. So this is a crazy like instance that we haven't seen much in Survivor.
Yeah, that was, I think Cedric kind of solidified for me Say is obviously the one who's kind of driving a lot of what's going on over there. Obviously, she put that ear, that little earworm into their, like, Kevin's controlling everything and got mm-hmm. Kevin out. But I think that Cedric, to me, is kind of looking like the center of this tribe, because mm-hmm. Justin talks to Cedric, Say talks to Cedric. The only person who's really not really, like, talking really hard to Cedric is Mary. And I think that, like, in this one instance, when Cedric says, hey, Say, you know, the people are coming for it, you, I think their bond is so good that even though it technically didn't, she didn't need to play it, I think in that moment, she's like glad she did, because I think it solidified them a little bit more, because it is, it's unique, because you either see, I feel like typically in Survivor, you either see somebody say, hey, play your idol and it hits, or somebody's like maybe giving somebody, they'll say, I will give you an idol or something like that. But it's not the same kind of dynamic. And I really am excited to see how this dynamic goes forward, and like what that running, that was them running on the next time on Survivor, right? Running around the beach. Mm-hmm. I think I'm really excited to see where this, but I think Cedric holds a lot more power than I think a lot of what I've heard a lot of other people like talk about in that tribe specifically.
I think you're right. I think a lot of our attention on that tribe goes to Say, because she's this large, boisterous character. She's driving a lot of the confessionals, obviously breaking the confessional count record in the premiere, and then continuing this episode with a ton of confessionals as well, being at the center point of this plan to flush this idol out and hopefully blindside her with it to Kevin's ultimate demise. The question becomes, did Justin and Cedric even tell her about this plan? And how does that reflect in some of these past moments we had in Survivor? Because ultimately, the idea of known advantages being out there is a fairly new era concept. It's mm-hmm. not something that was really talked about for a long while, even so much so that we have past survivors always advising people, don't tell people about your advantages. But we're in a world where everyone in this season knows who has an advantage at this point. With the exception of Thomas, who decided to actually keep it quiet.
I think I can count on my hand the amount of seasons that don't have a group idol hunt. Like, there are so many of these new era seasons that, like, everyone kind of knows or is looking together for these idols.
Yeah.
In the seasons.
So. Yeah, it's, and I think it's funny because I think, you know, production nowadays really likes this idea of shared information. You know, mm-hmm. in obviously the first Beware advantage was the first or the second, the first one where it's like yelling, I've got, you know, broccoli is goat's favorite food or whatever.
Yeah, whatever
for the first two seasons. And it's very interesting because I think it does create a lot of really great drama and chaos, but it also, I don't think, leads itself, or from what we've seen, to a lot of really amazing gameplay from the advantage holder, mm-hmm. where, you know, obviously when you can keep it secret, you can shock everybody. You can, you know, really kind of, Wentworth does not count, like truly everyone going crazy at tribal council because you are, but forcing people to kind of say it out loud takes the power of that knowledge away a little mm-hmm. bit, but also kind of makes that power spread out to everybody because it kind of changes the landscape of the game. But I'm partial to the really shocking, you know, like idol plays. I love Wentworth says that. My favorite idol play in Survivor history is when Natalie in San Juan del Sur plays an, did you vote for who I wanted you to vote for? Like, yeah. That is my favorite, because I think, I always say tribal council is theater, and I just love mm-hmm. that. And I think these group idols takes a little bit of that like showmanship away. But it's still really interesting how people move that within the game.
Well, I love that you brought up San Juan del Sur, because we are going to go to a different idol play in San Juan del Sur where Natalie tells John to play his idol. And this is different because it's at tribal council mm-hmm. where she's like, do it, do it, do it. And John negates those votes and saves himself. So we do have like common idol knowledge, but without the abuse of, you know, oh, just play it to flush it or something. Like, it was a genuine play it to save yourself.
I think the interesting thing about this idol play specifically in San Juan del Sur is this is Natalie's point of really taking control of that game. This is the, it ultimately ends up with Wes Nail going home here because this is the tribal council where both John and Keith play their idols. But this is the point where after Jeremy's gone, Natalie's sworn her vengeance on John and Jacqueline and all that. This is where we really see her take control of the game. And she does it by utilizing this knowledge she has of John possessing this idol, knowing where the votes are going, and then ultimately convincing him to play it, which was the correct move. And the genius part about this entire thing, it's not really detrimental to her if he plays this idol or not. But she is therefore making it known in case he does survive this vote, that he has an idol moving forward. It's a way of doing it because it's that, like you said, it's that theater of final tribal, or as a theater of tribal council, where you're being performative to everyone else because you want to share knowledge. And this is the easiest way to share knowledge. And it's so different than all that cagey behavior we tend to see at tribal council.
Yeah. And I think that her gameplay just throughout the entire season, I love that season. Just, it's truly one of my favorites of all time. And I love watching it, but it's like things like that where it kind of takes guts to do something like that. You know, you have to really be like, I know where I stand, or I'm trying to, you know, solidify what I know and where I stand, and you're willing to go out on a limb and do that. And I really love these gutsy players, and it's what we're kind of seeing in Say a little bit. And obviously doesn't really have to do with her idol play, but just being willing to go out there on the beach day one and saying, you know what, I don't want to play with you guys because you're not playing hard enough. That is so gutsy in this day and age in Survivor, just being willing to do that. And that's, you know, we see it in, you know, Natalie's move over and over again in San Juan del Sur. But I think, you know, we're seeing that come out also in this season. And I love it. It's so tasty. I don't know. It's so good.
Yeah. And I think, like John here, Say has the target on her back as like she played the idol. John played the idol where nobody knows. Like Natalie was like, hey, play the idol. And Cedric was like, hey, play the idol. So I think both of Cedric and Natalie were able to just like let the target go elsewhere for future rounds while solidifying loyalty in case they stick around and find another idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think it's like interesting to, because while, you know, what Natalie did was after the merch, you know, there was a jury that was, and so it's going to be interesting how it's different. Obviously, it's a different situation, but because it's so early in the game, right? We're second, two votes in, two boots in. And, you know, sometimes we see relationships crumble. Sometimes we see things being changed. There may be a swap. You know, we don't know what's coming this season. And so it's going to be very interesting because while, you know, you're trying to solidify these bonds so early on in the game, you don't actually know what's going to be coming for you later. Will this person who I've just, you know, maybe stuck out my neck for to, you know, save them, will that even help me in the long run? Whereas Natalie obviously knew who was in the game. You still don't know what's going to happen, but you know who you're playing with. You know where the chess pieces kind of are. And so this is going to be interesting for Cedric because he doesn't really know what's coming up next. He doesn't know if there could be a swap. He doesn't know when he doesn't know what this is, what's coming for him. So it'll also be interesting kind of from that perspective as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another interesting aspect about the Cedric of it all is Cedric's telling Say in order to get Mary out, not to get Kevin out. And it switches over, the target switches over to Kevin because of, I mean, the conversations that occur between Say and Justin, and ultimately Justin and Cedric decide that Kevin's the right way to go. But that's the other interesting thing about when this information is being provided rather than when Natalie's providing this information. Natalie's providing it the last possible minute, which almost forces the hand of John to play it right there or risk going home. Whereas Say is being told ahead of time, has enough time to make a counter plan, but still has to play the idol just in case, because Cedric led with this caveat of, I still have to vote with the boys so that they trust me.
Yeah.
We also want to mention Amanda and Parvati in Heroes versus Villains, where Amanda says, well, if you have an idol, Parv, you're going to need to play it tonight because it's going to be you. And Parvati's like, I feel like this is a load of BS because we've played together before and you're sewing some story here. Like, it was also interesting watching this moment where they're thinking, okay, this can't be right. There has to be some ulterior motive for you wanting me to play an idol.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, history is everything, you know. Like I said a little bit earlier, one of the great things about Survivor is you're seeing all these strangers for the first time, meeting each other and playing for the first time. And that's why a newbie season can be so amazing and crazy, because mm-hmm. it's just people who did not know each other, you know, 3 days before are, you know, voting each other out in this game for $1 million. But a returning player season is very interesting because there is real history there. Mm-hmm. If it's history in terms of on your season or in real life, just from being in the Survivor community, there is history there. And you kind of know how to read people because you know that person. And I truly love that moment. It was because you're like, yeah, Parvati knows. She knows what she's doing. She is so in control of just, maybe not necessarily in control, but just knows her friends or knows the people that she's around enough to realize, hey, there's something wrong here. And we're going to kind of use that to my advantage a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah. And of course, like the situation here is unfortunate for Amanda because Amanda doesn't know that Parvati has two idols at that point. And providing this information actually just assures that she can play the idol correctly no matter what, because she knows, oh, I don't have to worry about myself here anymore. Thanks, Amanda. And that's where the similarity comes with Say, is this idea of flushing the idol versus Cedric's was to actually save an ally. Whereas Amanda's was, let's get this idol out of here as fast mm-hmm. as possible.
Yeah. Sure. Sorry, go ahead, Micah.
No, you're good.
I think it's also really interesting because I think, you know, idols, when they were introduced in the game, really, you know, sent this kind of a chaos ripple throughout the show, because obviously in the beginning you were going to play it only for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. It's that just is what makes sense. And then in the evolution of the game, okay, I actually have this thing that could save somebody who actually is close to me, or I could use it against somebody, or I could, however you want to do it. And I think that, you know, it all just comes down to knowledge and where it comes from, and knowledge of the person or knowledge of the, you know, idol, or just of yourself. And I think all of that is incredibly interesting. I also want to say, I think that it's interesting to, when people also know where an idol is and tell people not to play it.
Yeah.
Or say, you know, I think you're safe, which is a very
alarm bells everywhere. Yeah,
but it sometimes works. And, you know, all of this, like talking at tribal council and stuff, just literally, I know this was only 2 seasons ago, but Kenzie and Tiffany telling Hunter not to play the idol? Was it Hunter? Mm-hmm. Like, because
everyone went out with an idol.
There's one of the 9 people that went out with an idol. But it's just, you know, you have, if you know where an idol is, there are so many different things that can happen. Is it, are you sure you can trust that person? Can you read them? Can you not read them? Am I going to go home with this idol? Sometimes I'm almost like, don't take it. I don't want that idol. Because there are too many iterations of what can happen. But I think that idol play, though, going back to Heroes versus Villains, is my second favorite idol play of all time.
Yeah.
Which is not a hot take. That's not a hot take.
Masterful. But yes, it's not a hot take. But it is a very popular take that is a good take to be a part of backing for sure.
Yeah. The reason why we keep bringing it up.
Yeah.
Because it is just, okay. I mean, I know this is not about the episode, but like 2 idols, Parvati pretty much knew she was safe. Natalie had the necklace, right?
Or Danielle did. Yeah.
Danielle.
We were talking about Natalie. I was. Danielle had the, and so you're basically solidifying that you guys are all good. It's just so good to watch. It's crazy.
So if you haven't rewatched this episode, do it because it's a fun time. Heroes versus Villains is always a good watch.
And we've actually covered it on the Patreon previously too. So you can hear again.
You could go deep in the Patreon archives.
Somebody commented on my TikTok today saying that their hot take, I did like, oh, what's your hot take in Survivor? And that their hot take was Heroes versus Villains is bad. And I went, so there are hot takes and then there are wrong takes. And that's a wrong take.
Yeah, so incorrect. you who commented that, wrong take.
Wrong take.
Yeah, as someone who has Parvati's Heroes versus Villains cast photo on their wall, wrong take.
Wrong take. Wrong take.
Yeah. All right, so let's go into our outplay moment of the week, and that is going to be tandem challenges, which I feel like we haven't gotten a lot of in the new era, where you have to work with a partner to accomplish a task, and it really held up this green tribe with Cedric and Kevin and not being able to navigate the balance beam. And I liked this aspect of the challenge where it made it not feel like an obstacle course in water, like just this basic Survivor challenge. And Phil and I have been covering Australian Survivor, and what we have been saying is like they just take normal challenges and do one twist to it, and it makes it feel a little bit fresher. And just adding this element of, hey, you have to have a buddy to do this challenge, really, I think, elevated this specific challenge, in my opinion.
Yeah,
absolutely. I definitely agree. It's one of those things where having a tandem challenge, a challenge where people have to work in pairs, especially in the tribal phase, changes the way that people view challenges. Because all of a sudden, we see this huge emphasis, obviously, on the need for strength. And I think we're really seeing it this season because we have David on the one tribe and we have the California girls on the other tribe, really showing like their strength in these challenges. And Vula is kind of these scrawnier guys trying to figure it out. And the fascinating thing about a tandem challenge is, yes, you can blame one person one of these challenges still, but ultimately there are two people working there. And especially a challenge like this, where two people have to work at applying the correct amount of pressure onto this buoy so that they can carry it across the balance beams. Yeah, we can blame Cedric for this, but part of the blame does fall on Kevin for pushing too hard on this buoy too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, anytime they can mix something up, I'm all for it. And I think that you're right. This is amazing. And I truly, when I saw this challenge, I thought of Australian Survivor. I literally was like, this feels like an Australian Survivor challenge to me. I love not to go too much in Australian Survivor, but I love a couple of seasons ago when it was like the Shawnee and Shawnee
it was with the block where they have to hold the block between the
scene. Yeah.
Which is like, it was a group challenge, but you were partner with somebody. But then also, you know, it was kind of individual because you had to keep on going. It wasn't like a relay or anything like that, which I loved. But gosh, watching that was so, because it was like Tiffany going over that or Ceree going over the balance beam on steroids, because you had to get two people over and you had to do, you know, wait with a ball and you had to do all of this other stuff. It was just so, it was great to watch. It looked like it was a nightmare to do. But I truly love when you have to figure out, you know, hey, when I'm sitting somebody out, am I sitting somebody out who actually can work really, really well with somebody else? Maybe they're not the strongest, but maybe they're a really good communicator. And maybe that they are somebody who can like really help in this kind of challenge. And I think it actually brings out other like important things in people's games, because it's like, you know, it's not just strength. It's also, you know, communication and balance and not getting frustrated. Maybe you might be the strongest person in the world, and if the other person that's with you keeps dropping, are you helping that situation or are you hurting that situation? So I think it's a really, I hate the challenges typically. Sorry, Survivor. But I really thought that this was a good addition.
So I feel like we're the perfect trio where you love all the social aspect of the game. I love the challenge aspect of the game. And John loves the strategic aspect of the game.
Not at all. All facets are perfect.
this trio here is doing it all.
We are a perfect Survivor player. Awesome. Yes.
Let's go. Can we all just tie one leg to each other and then go on the island?
Every challenge would be a tandem challenge if we did that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. And surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, in Survivor's past, we took both elements of this tandem challenge in Survivor, the balance beam and the, I don't know, ball aspect. I don't know. That sounds really awkward. And we found two different examples. So we're going to go with the chopstick challenge in China, where they have to get this flaming ball with different sized chopsticks over to light up some fireworks. And they have to work with a partner to try and apply the right amount of pressure to be able to carry it, to be able to, you know, light these fireworks. And you said China was your first season watching and was excited. So what were your thoughts with this challenge? And it was also in the tribal phase as well. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think, yeah, any challenge where you have to rely on somebody else, I know that I would probably get pretty frustrated. I think just like I'm putting myself in their shoes because I would be frustrated mainly with myself, because if it's by myself doing something, I can work through it. If somebody else was relying on me and I'm failing, that's when I get frustrated. And, you know, the fact that you had to carry this flaming ball, you couldn't push it, you had to carry it, and you could only control one pole, like today, is really interesting. I also want to say, love a nighttime challenge. This was at night,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Love a nighttime challenge. Bring back nighttime challenges. You know, and the fact that this was I felt like it seemed pretty difficult for a reward challenge was great. But here's the thing. I like it when you have to rely on another person when I'm watching the show, mm-hmm. whether it's for reward or immunity. And, you know, I think that challenge in China, you had to, it was also a flaming ball. It couldn't come close to you. Because it's on fire. So I think that challenge had a lot of really interesting elements. I would love to see them bring back something like that in terms of like the danger, the nighttime, mm-hmm. all of it. But yeah, I like when you have to, you know, rely on somebody and, mm-hmm. you know, I like that one in China.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing with the China one and why these tandem challenges feel so good, especially in this instance where it's the maneuvering of items, it's that communication element. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we kind of forget when we're watching challenges the social aspect of Survivor. Because mm-hmm. it focuses so much on either the physical aspect or the puzzle solving, things like that. Mm-hmm. Social is so important in Survivor. That's why we talk about it every single week, is because of these social elements. And communicating under pressure is mm-hmm. one of the hardest skills people will ever learn how to master. And when we see in China these tribes using these massive poles to maneuver a flaming ball, like there's a spectacle to this challenge, which I think is so fantastic. The fire obviously adds this kind of sense of urgency to it, which I think is very intentional by production. I would like to believe that the entire point of that is, hey, if this thing's on fire, maybe they will freak out more and not be able to communicate. And it forces the tribes to kind of settle into a sense of calm while they perform it. But the more they drop this ball, the more frustrating it gets because they're falling behind. And it's this push and pull tension of a challenge that makes it such an exciting viewing experience for us, the viewers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, say they sit out Joe on Siva. Well, Joe could have really helped Eva across the balance beam. That would not, like how you said, it, you know, communication is key here. Mm-hmm. And we also go into Panama. They did a balance beam where they're tied together. And in this immunity challenge specifically, it just so happened where both Kasaya and Lamina had one pair that was faster and one pair that was slower. And you had to be able to, you know, navigate these cross sections and who has the right of way, or you have to wait for someone to get off of your balance beam so you can be able to get on your balance beam. And also, if you slip off that balance beam, you lose all the water that's in your bucket that you're trying to transfer. So you're only as fast as your slowest member in this case, where if they can't do the balance beam aspect of this, you're kind of screwed. And you can't just let one pair just keep running this balance beam back and forth. But we will talk about it a little bit here. But Panama is what we are watching over on the Patreon. It is Panama Season 12, Episode 4, Starvation and Lunacy. All right, let's talk this challenge a little bit.
Go ahead. I think I said earlier that the other one was like a nightmare challenge. This is the nightmare challenge to me because I was never good at three-legged races in school. Being tied to somebody while you're also walking over balance beams is, again, it all comes back to communication and it all comes back to working together. And one person, no matter what your strength, making sure that you level everything out with the person that you're with. And in Survivor, when you are fighting for immunity or you're fighting for reward or you're fighting for whatever, your instinct is to go all out, right? But if the person that you're going with goes all out less than, like, they're all out is lower than yours, then you have to figure out a way to bring down how hard you want to push. And that is, I feel like, such a hard thing to do when your adrenaline is pumping, your emotions are high, you don't want to get voted out, you don't want your alliance to get voted, like, you don't want anything bad to happen to you or your alliance because you're fighting for $1 million. So many things bring together this kind of like just chaos, beautiful chaos. And then I found where so many things, you have to think of so many different things. Okay, we got to wait, we got to go, I have to pull back. You can't go as fast, you can't go as slow. It is, again, it just comes all back to communication. And what a great challenge, because it shows maybe who is really good at communicating. Maybe it highlights, oh, wow, this person really is good at saying, like using their words. Am I going to have to figure out a way to combat that at Final Trouble Council? Are they too articulate? Is that bad? You know?
Yeah.
Like, everything means everything in this show. Everything can, you know, any one small thing can lead to your demise. And so this is why I think challenges like this balance beam, working in tandem, it are so important to the game, because it shows another aspect of maybe how you're good or how you're bad.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the interesting thing about the structure of this challenge is it's broken into so many different parts. You have essentially two people doing nothing in this challenge. You have one person's literally doing nothing. They are sitting on it. Well, I guess technically they do a little bit. If I'm being fair, they sit on a chair until they are hoisted into the air and then pull a pin to win the challenge. So I guess that is an important part.
I volunteer.
Yeah, right? Me too.
You have the two people at the top who are just like pulling buckets of water up and filling up the bigger barrel. And then you have the two pairs from each tribe who are racing out there. And what's so fascinating about the structure of it is, yes, we have the crisscross, which like leads to some sort of conflict when it comes to crossing these balance beams. More importantly, the amount of slack on this rope tied between these pairs, surprisingly long. Not so long that you can kind of do your own thing, but not short enough that you're really like sticking close together. It almost gives you too much leeway intentionally, hoping that someone will take that extra step and it'll be too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I think about crossing a balance beam, like I want to go and get it done. But like if I'm Aris and have Bruce attached to me, I can't just go and get it done. I have to follow at Bruce's pace. But will that lead me to fall off? So Aris now has to be more like conscious of his steps. Terry is tied to Dan. Same thing. We're like these powerhouse players where if those two were tied together, forget about it. They'd be dust in the wind. But yeah, it it's really a great dynamic that I think Survivor needs to bring back more and have these tandem challenges, or have it in maybe like the merge phase of the game where, you know, partner with these people, but you don't face off with them at the end, like win as this duo. And like, do you want your duo to win immunity with you, or do you want, you know, I don't know. I think it would be interesting to add this aspect more often and not have it be such this like surprise or something like that.
Yeah. And honestly, you brought up probably my least favorite challenge in Survivor that they've been doing recently, where it's, you know, duos, you choose a pair, it's after the merge, and then you have stages. And then that last stage is, okay, we're going to fight against our threesome or our whatever it is. Or two twosomes are fighting or whatever it is. That is my least favorite challenge in New Era, or just in Survivor, because I think it makes it so that a lot, and maybe this is good, and maybe I'm going to convince myself otherwise right now, but it makes it so that people who, you know, maybe wouldn't have normally won that challenge would win. But I also think it makes it so that people who wouldn't win other challenges, but could win this challenge, wouldn't win. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
and I totally understand. We see we do see duos. And it's not like you're necessarily tied together, but you have to, you know, dig out the bag, or you have to, you know, roll around in that net, like, you know, Carolyn gets stuck in the net. And you have to figure out a way to, you know, have that work with that person and communicate. But it's like you're pairing up with somebody who you hopefully can win against in the end. But does that mean that you're not going to get there because they're maybe too easy to go against? So the duo, it's not the same kind of duo because you're not actively going for the same thing. You're actively going for the same thing. It's almost like Survivor. You're going for the same thing for a certain point, and then you have to fight them.
Whoa. Crazy concept.
But it's just like, I like that, you know, we're seeing duos where it's actually, okay, we're working together for a common goal.
And I like that aspect too, because whenever we have two people winning immunity, it's because it's like the split tribal council or something like that. I mean, pre-new era, it was like a male or a male or female, you know, wins immunity, and that's how the necklaces are divvied out. But now it's like, all right, it's a split tribal council, so two people have to win immunity. But like, why can't we have two people win immunity? Because they want to win immunity together.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think the other interesting aspect about tandem challenges, especially in this one that we see in Panama, is you look at these pairings, right? And the other pairing on the Kasaya is Shane and Courtney, who we know, like earlier in that episode, aren't getting along with each other. We know how they don't get along with each other later in the season. But what makes it so fascinating in the pre-merge portion of the game is seeing these two people cooperate through a tandem challenge, despite the fact that they don't really like each other all that much. It again, adds more to that social element that, yeah, we see a lot through camp life, but we can also see it in challenges sometimes.
True.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now we're heading into the outlast portion of this episode. And kind of one scene really stuck out to us. Outlast is kind of our catch-all for, you know, fun moments that we might want to talk about. And we're going to talk about the flies at the green camp. I mean, I feel like they're not really doing anything to them, but they're just an annoyance throughout all of green camp. I mean, they were getting them in confessionals. Like, it wasn't just around the camp with like flies because they left food out or something like that. No, that beach is just infested with flies for some reason. And I thought this scene was hilarious.
Yeah, it was. I think that in recent seasons, I maybe have forgotten, you know, that they're, you know, living outside, because I feel like in Fiji, it's a lot less than we've gotten. I think that's why they're in Fiji, because it's the elements aren't as taxing as maybe some other places. And if the worst insects they have are flies, then that's amazing. But I feel like we haven't really gotten annoying animals as much as we have in the past, you know, with like rats running on, you know, people's faces, mm-hmm. or, you know, I always picture Rupert's back in mm-hmm. Pearl Islands because he just gets like eaten by no-see-ums. It's just like a nightmare. And so the fact that we're dealing with, you know, flies, which are very annoying, like I have one fly around me, I'm like, I hate this. Get me out of here. But so many, it's so annoying. But it's like, you think about back in the day, it was like painful things, not just annoying things, which I do kind of like. I like that it's like more annoyance and not actually like, I didn't like seeing all the bumps. Oh, it's
horrible. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jeff called like, I forget when this interview was, but like Marquesas, one of the worst filming locations because of these no-nos. We hear all the entire cast talk about these no-nos that they're biting them up terribly and they can't see them at all. So, I mean, to have one location where Jeff is like never again, aside from like now they're in Fiji forever, but like one location being like never again is crazy because of the bugs that were there.
And the very interesting thing we get about this scene, and this kind of goes back to what I've been saying about Survivor 48 feeling more old school. It's been, and Tegwith, you actually mentioned it, it's been so long since had a moment in Survivor where it's felt like they've been battling the elements. Mm-hmm. We don't see them, and I mean, the shortened seasons kind of like help them move away from the rainy season a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so we're not seeing them in torrential downpours all the time. We're not getting that every single season or every other season anymore. They're not being evacuated every season because of a cyclone or anything like that. But I feel like something like bugs just are always present. I can walk out my front door and I'm dealing with bugs because that's how nature works. Yeah. And we just don't see them on Survivor. It's just one of those things that the show seems to have just gone away from. Yeah, and while we're not focusing as much on the survival elements of the show anymore, part of surviving is still like dealing with your environment, and these bugs are there, and they're so annoying. Yeah, okay, we have this one small segment in this second episode in 48 that somebody's going to come back and watch this podcast at some point or listen to it and be like, why are you even mentioning this? Like, it's not worth mentioning, but it's been so long since we've had this that, yeah, this short, less than 5-minute segment about bugs on the beach doesn't compare to Marquesas, where it's literally every episode we hear about no-nos. But it's still, it just puts a little bit of a smile on your face because it just reminds you, this is nature. Like, embrace it because this is part of the Survivor experience.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like the mosquitoes in various locations are definitely the things that stick out. Like you were saying, Rupert's back. I think like Misty in Panama, where she's just like a giant mosquito bite.
I grew up in Florida. And my football, I was a cheerleader for like a really long time. And our football like field was literally, I'm like below sea level basically. And my legs for like 5 years were just mosquito bites. Like truly, that's just what it was. And that is like, I go back when I'm watching these old seasons, I'm like literally getting itchy thinking about it because they're the worst things. You think that like one mosquito bite isn't that, like you have 50 mosquito bites, you are like not seeing straight. You're in so much pain. Yeah. Like it's not fun.
Yeah, and I remember in some of the old seasons and like some, you know, reunion shows where they're like, my legs have never been the same. There's so many scars everywhere. So, I mean, I'm glad that they just have flies now that they're not like scarring their body.
Yeah,
I'd scar my body for $1 million, but yeah. And then we've had some like other, you know, bug incidents, they're like one-offs, right? Like, you know, something that comes to your mind probably is that earworm and come wrong. And it's like, so like disturbing. And like, I could only imagine the pain that she's in for this, like, worm. That's not, it's not even a centimeter. Like, it's crazy. Like, I think everyone is like turning this off now because of the like visceral reaction this scene gives.
The fact that she could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part, like, it was, I know she was in pain, I know, but like the fact that she could, oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. I can't believe Kohrang. That was a wild, that was a so much was going on in that season. Oh yeah. My God.
Yeah. I'm glad she just didn't get medevaced for it. And it came out.
It's one of those things that I think that is just a moment that we remember. And I think that's why it's so important that they brought this scene with flashback. Because yeah, it's nowhere near to the extent of Jennifer having this bug in her ear that she's hearing and she's insisting is there and is in a ton of pain as she waits for it to get out. But again, it's just like this idea of like the elements are there. Things like this can happen, right? We've seen ticks. Like we have the entire sequence in Survivor Africa with the tick on Big Tom and them having to.
No, it's on Lindsay.
Or it's on Lindsay. You're right. It's Big Tom who's taking it off. That's what it is. Yeah,
he has the boil.
Yeah. And they have to pour the hot water on it to make its head release because a tick you have to like remove very carefully because if you separate the head and the body, that head's still in there and it's still doing the thing. And that's a beautiful part of Survivor. That is part of Survivor, just in this small extent where, yeah, okay, it sucks seeing these people suffer, but at least that way you know it's real. It's the reality part of reality TV.
Yeah. And I know this isn't a bug, but like I always think of when nature intervenes as the jellyfish sting.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, that's not in your camp, but like, you know, that's very real. You're in the ocean, like that may happen. And it just, like, it's also funny because Survivor's a TV show, right? So not only do we want to have a good game, we want to have see really good gameplay, but there are entertaining moments that come with it as well. And, you know, sometimes when you see nature come in and, like, do some crazy stuff, you get some entertaining TV. Pee on, like, who has to pee? Like, that's a funny, memorable moment that, you know, you're right. You're exactly right. It's, you're bringing in the reality into reality TV, and it's funny. It's a really funny, good moment.
Yeah, the shark bit me, so I bit it back with Hatch. Like, yeah, I feel like some things are lost with Survivor sometimes. When, you know, you said at the top of the episode, we're craving camp life. This is also kind of a camp life scene where it's like we're craving just the survival aspect of it too. Like, we want the strategy, yes, but can we save, you know, 3 minutes of an episode to talk about a bug in camp? Yeah. Like, it's so small and trivial, but like it brings the community to be like, oh yeah, you know, that sucks for them. Or, you know, I just feel like it's these small moments that Survivor can do that would make the fans just like that much happier. Like when they brought back the intro, it's like really a minute and a half is that too much to put in your show for an intro? Like, I don't know. But anything else, Tegwith, you have on 48 episode 2 or 48 in general, your hopes and dreams moving forward, winner pick? Maybe.
Oh, okay. My winner pick is a basic winner pick for this season, but I chose Shaheen because here's the thing. I couldn't, preseason, I loved everyone so much. It was like you guys are all too good. I didn't have a good read because I was like, man, that one's good. That one's good. So I was like, I guess I'm going to go with Shaheen, but I almost think that he was like too good, but I am just thinking that we are going to get, you know, what did Jeff say, that it was a season full of blindsides, and I'm really excited for that. And I think that we have people who are here to play, and I'm really excited to see what, you know, they have in store for us. I do hope we get a swap. I love a swap, and I really hope that that will happen. I think that it's, I think it adds something to the show because you have to navigate new relationships and new dynamics. And I really hope that that actually happens. But I just, you know, I just hope for a good season of Survivor, and I think we're off to a good start.
Awesome. Well, everyone, make sure you go and watch Panama episode 4, Starvation and Lunacy. That episode will be up tomorrow over on the Patreon, or Sunday because Phil is traveling. So stay tuned for that over on the Patreon. John, what else we got going on this week?
Well, okay. You know, we always have a lot going on. There's no digging deeper this week because Phil, Will, and Blake all decided to go to the Bryce and Wen event in LA this week. So there's just that one review or recap there for the episode. On Sunday, Phil's going to be joined by Gordon Holmes to do the power ranking. And that is incredibly exciting. Really excited to have him on the podcast. Phil and Will recapped the Traitors finale last night. So maybe, I don't know. I know a lot of like mixed reactions to the conclusion of the Traitors this time. So go see what Phil and Will have to say about that. We're going to be back to business as usual next week. We have the episode recap on Wednesday. There'll be a digging deeper on Thursday. McKenna and I will be back with the rewind on Friday. And McKenna, you also started a new podcast this week, in addition to already covering Australian Survivor with Phil.
Yeah, we have, you have another podcast. So Kyle and I are talking The Amazing Race Thursday mornings. So if you need a little like lunchtime break, come check out Kyle and I talking The Amazing Race.
And then, of course, Phil and Blake are still wrapping up Deal or No Deal Island. I believe there's two episodes left in that season. That's just the stuff on the main channel. You can always find that there. Then over on the Patreon, we have all that stuff. We have Every Season Matters. We have the casting perspective. We have the Survivor Rewind. We have $5 Tuesdays where Phil and I talk about movies. And that's about it right now. So make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel so you know when all of that content is coming your way. And we will see you all next week.
And don't forget to follow Tegwith on every social media because she's on it. And we will see you next week.